rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal: to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello there, and welcome to the Times Business Podcast. That's where we look ahead to some of the events, at least, that are going to be moving markets and shaping investment decisions too, even if it is only when to order your foreign currency. I'm Robert Miller. That means looking to the east and looking to the west. In Europe, Britain has started the formal negotiations for exiting the European Union. So better to catch up with than Bruno Waterfield, the Times correspondent in Brussels. And across the Atlantic in New York, we're joined on the line by James Dean, our US business editor. Warm welcome to you both. Bruno in Brussels, let me start with you. But first, we've got a clip here of Michel Barnier, the chief EU negotiator, at a meeting he gave after he'd had his first talks with the Brexit minister, David Davis. Just have a quick listen to this.
Our aim is to have 1 week of negotiations every month and use the time in between to work on proposals and exchange them. In the first step, the negotiation rounds will be broken down into three groups: citizen rights, the single financial settlement, and other separation issues. These groups will report back to their respective principals during each negotiating week.
Bruno, now that the talks have started, what's the feeling? Just set the scene for us over there and how Britain's position is regarded as we know it so far.
It's worth looking at it on two levels. The talks that have begun this week, which will continue over the summer. There's another meeting on the 17th. There'll be another cycle beginning on the 28th of August. They're going to be very technical. So it's meeting officials in negotiating working groups. Some of them know each other really well. They've been sitting across negotiating tables from each other, sometimes for 10 years, sometimes for 20 years. They're all really well prepared. They're all sort of fiendishly clever civil service type. So that's all going to go pretty well. And the fact that no one briefed what they were talking about on Monday shows that there's a bit of trust being built there. And then you've got the really important level, the higher level, the political level, and that's still really up in the air. I mean, after Theresa May's disastrous election, which has horrified people in Europe, not because they particularly care about her, but they care about, remember that concept, a strong and stable government? Well, they care about strong and stable governments because they're easier to do deals with. At that higher level, there is confusion about what Brexit means. Does Brexit mean a very close relationship to the single market and lots of jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice? Is Britain going to ask to effectively stay inside the customs union with a special arrangement for a transitional period of 2, 3, 5, 7 years? Will a transitional period become a permanent period? So everyone now wants to know what she thinks, and at a Brussels dinner on Thursday night, they will ask her where she is at.
James, just from your perspective over there in America, Liam Fox was discussing the possible trade talks too at the same time that David Davis was in Brussels. Are we talking parallel universes? I mean, what's the feeling over there about what Bruno was just talking about, or is it just too far away?
I think we're at a very different place over here right now in terms of US-UK trade deal talks. I mean, it kind of goes back to the point that Donald Trump's had spent quite a lot of time trying to fill senior posts in his administration. One of those senior posts was the US trade representative, who is effectively America's foremost trade negotiator. And that post was only filled fairly recently. So yes, earlier this week, Liam Fox met with the guy, Robert Lighthizer, for the first time. This is very, very early steps. This is just like first meetings between them. But they did say that they would begin kind of early stage trade talks next month. I mean, obviously, they can't conclude any deal while Britain's still in the EU. That's against the rules. But they can have these early talks without perhaps going too far in terms of, you know, they wouldn't be able to show each other draft texts of deals or anything like that. I mean, meanwhile, back in the UK, and this is a fairly recent announcement, Britain has actually appointed its own chief trade negotiator who will lead on trade deals with non-EU countries, because obviously the Department for Relations in the EU is dealing with the EU. So the Department for International Trade now has this New Zealand chap called Crawford Faulkner. He's extremely well known in trade circles. He's very well respected. He's a New Zealander. He worked at the World Trade Organization. He's also very bullish about Britain's prospects after Brexit. I think he said that the country was a sleeping giant in world trade. So there did seem to be a few issues with the DIT appointing a senior trade negotiator, but they seem to have been ironed out now that we have this chap, Crawford Faulkner. But as I say, you know, all of this is in the context that while the UK may be making its first steps with the US in terms of sorting a trade deal, obviously US in terms of trade flows is Britain's second biggest trading partner after the EU. So it's an incredibly important deal. But as I said, and as Wilbur Ross, the Commerce Secretary, has made very clear, Britain needs to sort out its deal with the EU before it can sign any kind of agreement with the US.
That's what I wondered, Bruno, over there. We've heard this before, haven't we, that Europe says you've got to sort something out. If we start doing trade deals, some have suggested, with other Commonwealth countries, with New Zealand and some of the Association of Southeast Asian Nations, is that going to be a problem for Europe, or are they going to respect the fact that we've got to go on with life afterwards, or they're going to insist, concentrate on the EU negotiations first, then don't do your trade deals elsewhere?
Well, I think they're even more confused than that, because you've got Philip Hammond at his Mansion House speech saying that he wants, certainly for a transitional period, for Britain to effectively remain within the EU's customs union. And now, if Britain did remain effectively within the EU's customs union, which applies to goods, then it can't negotiate free trade deals that apply to goods on the world stage, because the whole point of having a customs union is you have an external tariff, and it means that the countries that are within it can't pursue their own what's called in EU jargon commercial policy. So the EU is now really confused, because they're not quite sure what Britain wants, and that decision, particularly about customs union, completely comes before, if you like, any discussions or any negotiations that Britain can have with other trading partners. And think of it from the American point of view as well, or the Japanese point of view. If Britain can't make up its mind on customs union and the EU, how are you going to have a trade negotiation with Britain? It can apply to services, yes, but it can't apply to goods. And, you know, actually, most of global trade is still in goods.
James, I mean, what's your view on that in America? Are they as bemused as Bruno and people in Brussels?
The general election result was certainly a surprise. It probably, it probably didn't help matters a huge amount. But, I mean, to be completely honest, you know, there's still the same faces in the government that are going to be talking to the US about the trade deal. So, you know, Inspector Personnel, it's not a huge change. You know, obviously Liam Fox is still there. And as I say, we've got the New Zealand trade chap now, who is going to also help push these deals through. So, as I say, it's very much different over here, because the EU talks were always slated to start at a certain time. Then the election result happened, and then it was all up in the air. Whereas with the US, deal talks are always going to be further down the line, you know, kind of post an EU deal. So I think it's a kind of a slightly different situation over here. It's more, we're going to wait and see what happens in the coming months.
Bruno, I wondered, we've got so many ongoing projects with the European Union that they've invested. I'm thinking here of the bigger ticket items, you know, motorways and other bits of infrastructure. Is there a feeling that we can come to an agreement on that, or is there actually going to be some sort of hiatus where investors are going to be left wondering which way to jump?
Investors are worried, because the possibility of this much talked about cliff edge in Brexit negotiations, including customs checks, could disrupt supply chains. So if you're going to take an investment decision, that could be quite important to you. So you might delay that investment decision or not take that decision if it looks like the supply chain is going to be disrupted. You've also got potentially German companies like BMW have £2 billion worth of investments, 8,000 jobs in Britain, that might rethink that if Britain is not inside the single market and if the negotiations don't go well. So there is this whole area of uncertainty around the future in terms of these negotiations. On top of that, you have, you know, European funding, which has been used for projects in Britain, but in fact remains that Britain is what's called a net contributor in the sense that it puts more into the EU budget than it draws out of it. So on a purely technical level and a sort of logical level, the Treasury can easily make up those shortfalls. I think it's the uncertainty around issues, the things that Philip Hammond has been talking about, what relationship you have with the single market and the dreaded customs union, that are far more anxiety creating for investors.
And James, over there on Wall Street, what is the view? Are they just as worried about this talk about cliff edges that Bruno's referred to?
Yeah, I think certainly anyone who's got large investment flows towards the UK and the EU is worried. Nobody wants that scenario. A lot of the US businesses as well still very much make most of their money internally in the country. So the effect might not be quite as bad as on, say, I don't know, a large international company based in London. But the worries are here as well, and they'll be watching the talks in Brussels just as closely as they'll be watching the UK-US talks over here.
Well, I suspect it's going to be a very busy time for Bruno, particularly. James, can I ask you, can we switch now to Google? Obviously, I'll bring Bruno in a minute, but Google, huge American company, we are told that shortly it faces a heavy fine over complaints about advertising from European and American competitors. A seven-year investigation by the European Commission. We're told that the fine could be as much as $1 billion. Just put us in a picture about what this is and what it could mean.
The European Commission has been going after Google for quite some time now, and it's looking at three cases against Google. So the one that we're expected to hear about first, and the one we're expected to hear about a fairly big fine against Google, is the Google Shopping case. So obviously it's a competition case. This is to do with Google Shopping, which is one of Google's products, which essentially shows, say if you type in, you want to buy a kettle, you type in a kettle and maybe a brand, you'll get some results on your Google results page. And up the top, there might be Google Shopping box, which will have some suggestions. What the Commission is worried about is that Google search box is kind of more prominent than others. So say other shopping comparison sites, their results will be shown further down. Essentially, what the Commission said is that gives Google an unfair advantage. It's abusing its dominant position in the market, and it's going to levy a fine. Now, the Commission can actually levy a fine as much as, I think, 10% of global turnover. So the fine could be actually well above $1 billion. But yes, something in the region. I mean, the record fine, I think, so far was against Intel, which was worth $1.4 billion at the time. So people are expecting a fine certainly larger than that. But, we'll have to wait and see. I think the idea is at the moment that this fine will come before the end of August. But as with anything, we'll have to wait and see.
Bruno, are they being draconian in this, or is it just something if they do find against it, it's perfectly fair? And I was just wondering, of course, if a big American company like Google is fined such an eye-watering amount, is it not likely to bring the real Donald Trump back onto Twitter, raising the flag for American companies being beaten up by nasty European commissioners?
Well, I think the Americans will not be happy with it across the board. I mean, it's not just the Trumps. Said that they're not happy with it. This is a political decision. All big competition decisions are political. Google is firmly in the EU side. And actually this case, the retail case, is one of the most unusual in the sense that you don't have to be a tech competition wizard to realise there are some big other online retailers out there, Amazon and eBay, just for starters. So lots of people do say, well, hang on, how dominant is Google's market? Maybe it does privilege its own businesses above others, but the online retail market seems quite competitive at the moment. So the Commission is actually going to have to make a really good case if it goes for a big fine.
You raised the prospect about Donald Trump coming on to Twitter to maybe, raise the flag for American companies abroad. But I mean, as Bruno said, this is a political decision. It's a protectionist decision. And obviously, Donald Trump is quite pro-protectionist. So he may well come out on Twitter to defend them, but he'd be quite hypocritical if he does so.
Bruno, a final thought from you. I mean, do you think it could spark some sort of trade retaliation, do you feel? Or is there an acceptance that, American companies also complained about Google?
in the past, in this world of competition regulators, particularly on cartels and market dominance, the EU and the American competition regulators have sort of moved hand in hand. So if there was to be some kind of coordinated sanctions or pressure on Google to open up its sort of advertising and searches from both the Americans and the Europeans, I think it would diffuse this allegation that the Europeans are going for an American company. And I think while that doesn't happen, that allegation will linger. And I guess, you know, people have long-ish memories and remember that the Commission doesn't always, like a lot of bureaucracies, get it right on technology. So it was sort of regulating Microsoft in terms of browsers at a time when the market already and competition already was generating, you know, new browsers like Firefox and, of course, Google's Chrome.
All right. Well, thank you both very much. There's lots to keep us occupied there. And remember, you can keep up to date with all those stories and the rest of the financial news and analysis online on your phone or tablet and in the paper. And if you'd like to become a subscriber, then just sign up at thetimes.co.uk. That'll also entitle you to our daily morning and lunchtime business bulletins from the business editor, Richard Fletcher. If you want to hear us weekly on a regular basis, just subscribe through iTunes. And my great thanks to Bruno Waterfield over there in Brussels, very busy, and also James Dean on Wall Street. Thank you both. They're on Twitter, so do follow them. Thanks for listening, and please join us again next time.
Off Air, the podcast with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
I go to the sink and I have some cheese.
You eat cheese in the sink?
Doesn't everybody?
Every Monday to Thursday, Jane and Fee keep the microphones on after their Times radio show.
I think if we were to do a Mr. and Mrs.
Oh, no.
How would that go in the booth?
Badly. It would go very badly.
Unencumbered and off air.
Two tiny women with gobs.
Off Air, the podcast. Now available on the Times radio app.